jumped it out concerning the last chapter that we go on to.
Yes. Just at the very end, yesterday you were saying how not possible to get realization of God just by reading. And he said, and most people don't know how to read anyway. And I was thinking, I probably don't know how to read. Could you explain that for a moment?
I tell you what, in the course of today's class, we'll talk a little bit about some ways of reading. I wasn't really, I have a term for it. I didn't pick this up from any pedagogical scheme, but I call it active reading. That's one aspect. Just how to read in general. I had a very long, 20 years of schooling and more. The mundane education, there were a few advantages, and one of them was that I had a couple of good teachers and I learned how to read. So there's that sense for anything, just how to read. And then, if you do that right, actually, be pretty good. We'll talk about that some more. I'm glad you asked that question.
And actually, learning how to read, what's something that you learned in a mundane context, in a devotional context, turns out to be the equivalent of submissive oral reception. Okay. Oh, here we are. I'm just getting the stuff up here. Oh, yeah, and I have a handout for you. I'll also put this on the board. I printed this out so people could look at it. I only had 10 sheets of paper with me, so I only have 10 copies. Get some more paper. I have this on the board also, on the screen. Yes, some people will have to share if there's more than 10 in this room. That's what it's like. Yeah, we only have one day for this chapter. And of course, many of the verses don't really have purport of much. But what I did was I took there's questions. By my count, there's 26 questions. But as I put down at the bottom, NB, you know what NB stands for? This is a standard abbreviation. It's Latin. Nota bene. Note well. Pay attention to this. The enumeration of the questions is a slightly arbitrary feature, since topics within one verse can sometimes equally well be united into one question or separated as two or more. I think even the acharyas sometimes, they take it as one or two. So you'll see, for example, here is text 21, and I've got three different questions out of there. But as I point out down here, questions 22 and 23 in text 21 is actually the same sentence, but read in two different ways. Prabhupada does that. Reads it in one way in the word for word, and in another way in the running translation of the commentaries, mostly. So That's the number of questions that's on this column here, is the question number, and then the text numbers that go with it. So this way, you can kind of give you an overview of what's really happening, all the questions that are being asked. We just help. A few of them are a little obscure. First of all, a lot of them don't sound like questions, but they are. They look like statements, but they're questions. They don't use an interrogatory pronoun. Pronoun, but they're questions, okay? So you got that. There you look at it, you can go through it. We'll pause here and there for these different things here. And you notice that there's a question, and then there's six verses where Maharaj Pariksit then expresses his deep appreciation for enthusiasm from hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. He's really happy about it. So he asks this first question, basically how this is Maharaj Pariksit. We're back at the banks of the river, Jamuna or Ganga, whichever one it is, and with Shukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Pariksit. He wants to know, how did Narada explain the transcendental qualities of the Lord, and to whom did he explain them? Because he was just told in the last chapter from Brahma to now expand this and teach it to others in a missionary spirit, as Prabhupada said in the purport. So that's his first question. First thing on his mind. Who did he talk to? And how he did it. Now we've already, of course, heard him in the first canto talking to Vyasadeva. But if you look at Bhagavatam, who else did he talk to? Do you know? Anybody recall in the rest of Bhagavatam? Yeah, Dhruva is one. Prahlad Maharaj, yeah. Prachini Bharhisha. Yeah. He's all over the place. He's really busy. Talk about a missionary, huh? Before you get around. Yeah, right. So for this question, it gets answered a lot. In the course of Srimad Bhagavatam. But first, let's go to the text now. There it is. I just pointed out a few here. I highlighted this particular expression because guna akyane. Agunasya. He's saying, describing the qualities of one who has no qualities. This is literally what it says. Okay? Now, here's an example of how transcendence looks like it's contradictory. And you see, there's gunas, the material qualities. Then, by this process, that's what's it called? Remember the word? Praktibodham matram, right? The process of negation, just the opposite. So if the material world has gunas, then transcendence must be aguna. That's the Mayavadi position, no qualities. But that's not the final step. We go one step further, because as I pointed out before, Prabhupada has this argument that when you just go by negation, you're still in the relative world, because you're just, the negations are pinned upon what they negate. So there's another step to take in this dialectical development, and that's the synthesis, right? Because you know this notion of a dialectic made famous by the philosopher Hegel, and then used by Karl Marx, turned upside down. But the idea of a dialectic is a three-phase progression. Thesis, antithesis and synthesis. And Hegel had a whole theory of how history moves through this process of thesis, antithesis, and synthesis. People are doing one thing, and then they do just the opposite, and then there's a third phase where how the two things are united, and that synthesis then becomes the new thesis. Things keep going, right? Anyway, he's a big speculator, but there's something to this dialectic, because we have this karma, jnana, and bhakti, which actually fits that kind of classical pattern. So that qualities is the thesis. There are material qualities. Then we become disgusted with the material world. We want to turn away from it, and we become attracted to that which has no qualities. Right? That's the antithesis. But there's beyond that is bhakti. And we go through that which is simultaneously with and without qualities. So qualities, no qualities, and the qualities of one who has no qualities. That is to say, but it's not, it's not really he has qualities but no material qualities. If you put that word material in there, so there's such a thing as spiritual qualities. Now, you know, to a hard nosed Maya mind, to say spiritual qualities simply sounds like a contradiction in terms. Or to say spiritual name. You can say the dialectic with anything, name, form, qualities. There's material form, then there's a negation of form, and then there's the form of one who has no form. That is to say, he has a spiritual form but no material form. But to a Maya, hardcore Maya body, the idea that form means material form is so strongly in their mind that the idea of a non-material or a spiritual form is just completely contradictory. So it's a thing in philosophy. That in the beginning you can set up your definitions in such a way as to make certain things impossible. But you have to look and see what the presuppositions. Often these unstated presuppositions are the most powerful ideas. And one of the Maya values is that all form is material form, all name is material form, all qualities are material qualities. And all we have to say is, who said so? How do you know? You know because that's your experience of name, form, and qualities. Why is your experience the judge? But because they made their own experience of the material of the world the judge, that's why Prabhupada calls them empiricists. And empiricist means, I think we shall have to scatter the flocks outside if this keeps up here. You want a stick or shall we just turn on this? Just threatened.
Don't get out of here.
So empirical means that knowledge comes from sense perception. And so that's why even these people who are transcendentalists actually at heart they're empiricists. This is what's going on in that. So here you see an example of it. One who is gunatyane, one whose quality, the description of the qualities of one who is aguna. This word that apostrophe means there's an A there that's dropped. You can see the word for word is agunasha. Now here's an example of what I would say is active reading, just to start off again. When you read a purport to Prabhupada, you should ask yourself, why is Prabhupada saying this statement in this particular situation? So he begins, Devarshi Narada was directly instructed by Brahmarshi, who was also directly instructed by the Supreme Lord. So we hear this. Here's the distributive succession. And so therefore the instructions imparted by Narada to his various disciples are as good as those of the Supreme Lord. So that's actually, Prabhupada is thinking of this word Deva Darshana. This is a name for Narada. He's using this name for Narada, Deva Darshana. Narada, who is as Prabhupada says in the word for word, whose hearers are as fortunate as those instructed by Lord Brahma. But the word Deva, you know, it can mean a demigod. Here it means, he's saying Lord Brahma, but it also can mean Krishna. So seeing him, Deva Darshana, seeing Narada Muni is the same as seeing God. And that's what Prabhupada's purport is about. Because, and he's starting with this word Deva Darshan. So so when Prabhupada says something, he's just not saying whatever comes to his head. He really has something in mind. And so one thing to read is always, why is this here? Why is this word here instead of another word? Why this statement instead of another statement? And so we shouldn't read in a lazy way, but you try, but in an alert way and a very active way, try to understand what is being said. And I think for reading like this, the idea is that you want to hear what is being said. So one should try to empty one's mind of presuppositions and prejudices and everything, and make oneself sort of totally receptive to what is being said. But by that total receptivity, by being receptive in that way, also one has to be very actively trying to understand why this is being said. You can do it with the text in the same way, and also why this rather than that. Sometimes, you know, there's no particular answer you can figure out, but a lot of things become clear. So here, we've already been hearing about the disciplic succession, and so Prabhupada, this Deva Darshan, is actually the quality of anyone in a disciplic succession. And Prabhupada makes that clear. This is the way, so that the instructions imparted by Narada to his various disciples are as good as those of the Supreme Lord. That is the way of understanding Vedic knowledge. And now he talks about the disciplic succession, how it's distributed by, and he uses the term descending process. And then he talks about no chance to receive it from mental speculators. That's not the ascending process. Therefore, wherever Narada Muni goes, he represents himself as authorized by the Lord, and his appearance is as good as that of the Supreme Lord. There's Deva Darshan. Similarly, the disciplic succession, which strictly follows the transcendental instruction, is the bona fide chain of disciplic succession. And the test for such bona fide spiritual masters is that there should be no difference between the instructions of the Lord originally imparted to his devotee and that which is imparted by the authority in the line of disciplic succession. So that's how it works. We've also mentioned this fact that it's not that you have to say it in exactly the same words, exactly the same way. One should say it as communication to make it clear to people. So if there's realized knowledge, one is able to do that, especially. And here, Prabhupada mentions the aguna, or without any quality, does not mean he has no quality, but he has no material quality. These transcendental all material conceptions, and thus he is described as aguna. Then the king says to him, I want to know, I want to hear more about what Narada Muni said and to whom and how he said it, how he expanded Bhagavatam and so forth. I wish to understand this tattva, this truth. Here's another thing to point out. You don't have to know that much Sanskrit, to a little bit of grammar maybe, but here I wish to know the truth of those who are well versed in the absolute truth, the tattva vidya. Those who know tattva, I wish to know the truth as known by those who know it. And then those who there's another name for the Lord, Abhuta Virya. It's genitive case, yeah, of one who possesses wonderful potencies. This is following from the previous chapter we were discussing always about the potencies of the Lords. And this is Loka Sumangala, auspicious for all the planets. When you say Loka, it doesn't mean planet, but also can mean the inhabitants of the planets. The whole world knows this. Now, Prabhupada derives an interesting little point here, that Bhagavatam does not belong to a particular sect. It's for everybody. Especially for everyone. And then he also, again he says, you see why he mentions this? Not particularly, because this is the purport. Right? What is it the purport to? Well, Loka. Loka Sumangala. Mangala means auspicious. Su means very auspicious. Loka Sumangala. And that it is, he says, and then so when it says everybody and all the planets, well, it doesn't belong to a particular sect, and everybody means not just devotees, it's not just us, this is for devotees, but also for the non-devotees too. Which, you get devotees and non-devotees, that's everybody. Right? That's everyone. And then he mentions that the auspiciousness is realized when one hears with devotion and attention from the right source representing the Lord in the cyclic succession. The cyclic succession trains people how to hear with devotion and attention. I'm just pulling out a few things here. So now he mentions, please, he wants to keep on going. Please keep on narrating this, because he's going to give up his body. And now he wants to leave his body like that, being completely free from material qualities. He wants to die nisanga, without any material. His nisanga. Placed his mind in the Lord, and therefore, as Prabhupada talks about, to hear Srimad Bhagavatam is to associate with the Supreme Soul. Here's the name of Krishna, Akila Atma, the universal soul. To associate with the Supreme Soul, that's why Prabhupada uses this word, because it's in the text. And when Prabhupada had us give Bhagavatam class, we recited the text in Sanskrit, we read the word for word, we read the one in translation, we read the purport. So all of these are important. We should not be lazy readers of Bhagavatam and skip the Sanskrit, skip the word for word, and go straight to this translation. This is all there to help us delve deeply into Srimad Bhagavatam. So, So this is what? To fully engage in hearing Bhagavatam means to associate with the Supreme Soul. To associate with the Supreme Soul means to be liberated from the qualities of matter. And then he gives the example of how the sun destroys darkness. And so Maharaj Prakshit is now a realized soul by this secret of liberation. That is, hearing Bhagavatam properly is the secret of liberation. And of course, I think those verses have already happened, huh? Ante Narayana Smriti. To remember the greatest perfections, to remember Narayana at the end of life. What is my duty at the time of death, right? And then performed by professional men. By the way, Prabhupada's use of the word professional is a little different from the common use of the word in the West. When we say something is professional, we mean usually it's well done. Amateurs don't do things right, so you need something fixed, get a professional. They're trained. For Prabhupada, it means they do it just for the money. It's always a derogatory term. Even somewhere he has the expression of professional prostitute.
Isn't that redundant?
You would think so, but Prabhupada, he said something very harsh in one of his books somewhere. He said, or a lecture, he said, in India we have the prostitute, in America you have the girlfriend. Maybe it's not redundant. So when he now talks about professional men, it maybe simply means they do it to earn money. They're not really doing anything except using it for sense gratification. Here's another interesting thing about hearing Bhagavatam. Again, the word, those who hear Shraddhaya, they're endowed with Shraddha. And Prabhupada uses this word that he used quite a few times in the last verse, earnestness. What is the word? Utkantya. You know when you raise your neck, that's utkantya. So earnest means you're like this. Hridagva utkantya. So same is sevan mukhe. Lifting up your face. Sevan mukhe ikivada utsvayabhu. When you dispose to serve, this is face lifted up this way. So utkantya. This earnestness, right? So that's his translation of Shraddha, which means faith, but it has all these implications. Nityam and swachesitam, Prabhupada, series by one's own endeavor. Then he says the Lord becomes manifest within one's heart. Kalena na ati durgena. Soon, after not a very long period of time. This is Maharaj Prakrit says. So Prabhupada says here, Maharaj Prakrit personally recommends one hear Srimad Bhagavatam regularly. So you get the Prabhupada is he kind of translates in other words the verse. Since these verses are so full of meaning, that it's good to hear it in different language, in different aspects. One hears Srimad Bhagavatam regularly, nityam, he's referring to the word in the verse, always by one's own effort and with serious devotion also. This is Shraddha. That's what Chaste Sam. This will help one to see Lord Sri Krishna manifest in one's heart within no time. And then he talks about the pseudo devotees who does he believe? And then this really very beautiful verse. The sound incarnation of Lord Krishna, the Supreme Soul, that is to say, Srimad Bhagavatam, enters into the heart of a self-realized devotee, sits on the lotus flower of his loving relationship, and thus cleanses the dust of material association, such as lust, anger, and hankering, say greed. Thus it acts like autumnal rains upon pools of muddy water. So this is bhava sororuham. Bhava here, he takes as meaning your feelings for Krishna, what we generally call your rasa, is your bhava, your constitutional relationship. One is situated in one of five primary rasas and so on. That's what he's talking about. Which is described here as a lotus flower of his loving relationship in the heart, enters the ears, and therefore then it cleanses shamalam, these material qualities. As an example is here, like a tumble rains upon pools of muddy water. And so, Prabhupada's purport, it is said that a single pure devotee of the Lord can deliver all the fallen souls of the world. This is a commentary on autumnal rains on pools of muddy water, as he makes clear. Because he goes on to tell us now that that by this you can deliver a devotee like Narada can deliver not only oneself but the whole world. The comparison to the autumnal rain that falls on muddy reservoirs of water is very appropriate. When there's this rainfall, when there's a lot of rain, a little climatic information, during the rainy season, there's so much rain, everything becomes stirred up and all the waters are muddy. But then in the autumn, the sharak season, there's a little bit of rain, and that clears away the mud. Right? So the muddy waters of the rivers all over the world become at once clear. By addition of some chemical, a small reservoir of water, like that of a metropolitan waterworks tank, can be cleared. But by such a tiny effort, it is not possible to clear up all the reservoirs of water like the rivers. A powerful, pure devotee, the Lord ever can deliver not only his personal self, but also many others in his association. So the autumnal rain, universally purified water. So Bhagavatam is like that. It can deliver the whole world. That's the implication of this example about the autumnal rains. And again he says, cleanse the hearts of the people in general by the devotional service of the pure empowered devotee. And he goes and he mentions the descendant succession, Narada, Sukadeva, Mahaprabhu, six Goswamis, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, where this power is coming empowered. Now it mentions Swachetasa, personal endeavor, and Prabhupada says one has to take it seriously and try for it. But how does the purification take place? By the personal endeavor of the Lord within the heart. He takes it a little further. Actually, the real purification takes place because the Lord, who's sitting in the heart, does it. We actually don't purify ourselves. But he says, how does the Lord give him a heart? The Lord is always within the heart of the living being. Oh, so he doesn't come in a way. But he becomes manifest by one's devotional service. So our effort is to facilitate the manifestation of Krishna, and then Krishna carries out the purification. And then he talks another aspect of this example. Again, when you add a little iodine or whatever they use nowadays to clean a little bit of water, that's so, or the city water works, the sediment may come down, but a slight agitation, everything becomes muddy. But he says, but devotional service of the Lord is the only method of cleansing the heart for good. So not only does it spread out, but it's also so powerful that it works once and for all. So Prabhupada gets all that from the autumnal rings. Not just Prabhupada, he's got the previous acharyas and they have thought about this and understood the implications. Right? And so he goes on with his... I love this verse here. This is a very inspiring verse. A pure devotee of the Lord whose heart has once been cleansed by the process of devotional service never relinquishes the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, for they fully satisfy him. And here's another example, the example of the traveler, as a traveler is satisfied at home after a troubled journey. So he says here, now Prabhupada takes this often in an interesting direction. Because you would think, okay, now I've got devotional service, the troubles are over. Maybe the troubles are, you know, the troubles in the material world, now there's no more troubles, everything is nice. Prabhupada has exactly a different reading of this. And this is a place where you can meet with Prabhupada's very personal thing where he talks many, many times about his own... Everybody in their career devotional service has some time where they have some very strong realization that set them on the course and guided them and keeps them going always. This happened to Prabhupada. He tells us about it. And it shows up in this purport if you know what to look for. So he says, now we're talking about the troubled journey. So what Prabhupada says, in discharging such devotional service, which you never quit, in the preaching of Srimad Bhagavatam, sometimes representative of the Lord engages in preaching work, meets various so-called difficulties. So if now, if you're in devotional service, and you meet with all kinds of difficulties, you don't quit. You don't give up. That's a problem. So this was exhibited by Lord Nityananda when he delivered two fallen souls, Jagai and Madhai. He was assaulted. And similarly, Lord Jesus Christ was crucified by the non-believers. But such difficulties are very gladly suffered by the devotees in preaching. Because in such activities, although apparently very severe, the devotees of the Lord feel transcendental pleasure because the Lord, the Lord is satisfied. If they know the Lord is satisfied, they're satisfied. And if in the course of satisfying the Lord they undergo difficulties, those difficulties become satisfied. It's not that, even if we say we seem to develop a taste for austerities, it is not that a devotee is some kind of masochist that enjoys pain, that enjoys suffering, but rather when that austerity, the course of that austerity, his devotion to Krishna increases, that's what the devotee relishes, is the devotion to Krishna. And therefore, austerity starts to feel good. because it increases his devotion to Krishna. And if there's troubles in the service of the Lord, if Krishna is pleased, then he takes on those troubles very positively. But Prabhupada is explaining this. Prahlad Maharaj suffered greatly, but he still never forgot the lotus feet of the Lord. This is because a pure devotee of the Lord is so purified in his heart that he cannot leave the shelter of Lord Krishna in any circumstances. There is no self-interest in such a service. The progress of cultivating knowledge by the gyanis or the bodily gymnastics by the yogis are ultimately given up by the respective performers. That's a fact. The process by which you attain perfection, when you achieve what is your perfection, you quit the process. There was a lot of work and now it's over. Just like a person works at a job, when he saves enough money, he goes on vacation. When he goes on vacation, he doesn't work. That's the point. Devotional service is not like that. It's absolute. It's never given up because the means and the end are the same. But, so he says, a devotee of the Lord can never give up the service of the Lord. And then Prabhupada says this, for he is ordered by his spiritual master. Pure devotees like Narada and Nityananda Prabhu take up the order of the spiritual master as the sustenance of life. They do not mind what becomes of the future of their lives. Isn't that heavy? That's really wonderful. When he says they take up the order of the spiritual master as the sustenance of life, Prabhupada is referring to a purport by Vishwanatha Chakravarti to the Vyasa Atmika Bhuti verse. Because Prabhupada tells the story in a Vyasa Puja homage he delivered on Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's disappearance day, rather. It was his disappearance day in Los Angeles, I think in 1686. Very early on. And he begins by saying, it's an amazing thing that I'm from one country and you're from another country, and somehow or other we've come together. And he says, how did it happen? If this happened, well, it was by the arrangement of Krishna. And then he starts to tell the story. That when in 1936 he was doing some, he was a householder and was doing some business in Bombay, and he was feeling insufficient, unsatisfied with himself, and so on an impulse he wrote a letter to his spiritual master, who at that time was in bad health and was at Jagannath Puri by the sea trying to recover his health. And in the letter, Prabhupada says, he said, my godbrothers who are sannyasis and brahmacharis, they are serving you so much. I'm a householder. I'm entangled in business and everything. I feel I can't do it. Is there anything I can do to serve you? Prabhupada said, just on an impulse, I wrote this letter. And he got a letter back from Bhaktisiddhanta, and this is what Bhaktisiddhanta said to him. It will be good for you and for those that help you if you preach this Krishna consciousness in the English language. Now you should understand this order, which first of all it meant go to the West, because it was a well-known desire of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And in fact, it was the order he was giving all his leading sannyasis to go to the West. It wasn't Prabhupada, it wasn't the only one who received that. Lots of them did. And many of them didn't happen. There was one attempt and it didn't work out very well. Bhaktisiddhanta was not very happy with what happened. So Prabhupada got that same order. And so Prabhupada says, he said, when he received the letter, I couldn't imagine what I would do. Couldn't make plans. How would I get from here to there? He said, I couldn't imagine how to go there. He said, but I took the matter seriously,
And especially after reading this purport by Vishwanath Chakravarti. Vishwanath Chakravarti is discussing this verse, Vyavasahatmika Buddhi. You know, this says that to have success in devotional service, you have to have single-minded determination. Vyavasahatmika Buddhi. You can't have so many interests in life, and Krishna consciousness is only one among them. You have to have single-minded dedication. And Vishwanath Chakravarti says that this dedication means that one takes the order of the spiritual master as his life and soul, as the sustenance of his life. And you should not care about being liberated or not liberated. That shouldn't be your worry. You should not worry about success or failure. Just under any circumstance, one should commit oneself to that order. So Prabhupada realized, I don't have to, you know, figure out anything except I have to commit myself to this order. So Prabhupada did. And he said, so I tried a little in that way. And now it has come out that I am here and you are here. And we have all facility. Because the other thing we noticed with Prabhupada, he was trying, first he tried to be a businessman so he could make some money, so he could go to the West. That didn't happen. He said, as a matter of fact, Krishna made me a business failure. So when he ended up in the West, he had no money. He had no institutional support. He tried to work with the Gaudiya Mutt and just gotten impediments to preaching, actually. He tried to start up in India with a movement. That didn't work out. There was some politics, and the League of Devotees didn't work out. So finally, when he came to the West, you know, he was by himself. He had no support. He had no money. He was allowed to take 40 rupees outside of India, which nobody would convert. And so he got $25 from the captain of the Jaladuta, and that was his startup capital for ISKCON. He was 70 years old. He'd had his 70th birthday, so he didn't have youthful energy. He had a heart attack coming over. He didn't have good health. But the asset, as far as Prabhupada was concerned, was that this commitment to the order of the spiritual master. So there he's talking about his own realization. And you certainly look at what Prabhupada went through both before and during his time. He had a lot of troubles, a lot of difficulties, so many hassles going. As a matter of fact, as soon as you really start to preach, then your life becomes tough. It really does. So here he says, talking about this, they take up the order of the spiritual master as the sustenance of life. They do not mind what becomes the future of their lives. The future of my life, that's Krishna's business. My business is just to commit myself to it. So this is so then he says, the example, a traveler leaves home, search for wealth in far distant places, the forests and the ocean and the mountaintops. There's troubles when he's in unknown places. But also such troubles are at once mitigated as soon as the sense of family affection is remembered. He thinks of his wife and kids at home, and then I get some comfort. And as soon as he returns home, he forgets all such troubles on the way. Then he says, a pure devotee of the Lord is exactly in a family tie with the Lord. And therefore, he's undeterred in discharging his duty in a full affectionate tie with the Lord. So I spent some time with him. This is a very wonderful report. If you know to look for this, at the time Prabhupada quotes Vyavasahatmika Buddhi, you'll find again and again and again he quotes it. With Vishwanath Chakravarti's understanding, he repeats it in many, many places. He calls it many times the secret of success. And so we can see here how Prabhupada is able to talk in this way with such conviction.
and come up with a sentence like that, they do not mind what becomes of the future of their lives. It's really wonderful. Now we go back. He starts the question. This is the second question. And we don't have time to go through all of these, but I've just pulled out a few things. Here, for a few times, Prabhupada calls Maharaj Pariksit a typical devotee. He just doesn't want to hear, but is anxious to establish the philosophical basis of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is the science of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and as such, all questions that may arise in the mind of a serious student must be cleared by the statements of the authority. So you notice, it's amazing to me, Maharaj Pariksit has been listening to all this, he's been completely absorbed, and as soon as he has a chance, he's got 2 dozen questions. Usually if we think of questions, we have to stop listening and think, but somehow or other, he's just been listening very intently, but as soon as the opportunity is there, he just comes out with these questions. They just spill out, one on top of another. And he really wants to know about these things. And he's on the verge of leaving his body. And look at the things he wants to know about. The kalpas and the dikalpas, the universal creation and the sub-creations within it, the karma, time, in relation to karma, they explain the creation of the underworld, the sky, the heaven, the grahas, meaning the astrological planets, the nakshastras, the stars, the mountains. He just wants to know. Read that. You notice he doesn't jump to the 10th canto and want to hear just about Krishna's plan. He's inquisitive about all this stuff. And when Prabhupada uses this word typical devotee, he means to say he is the prototype that we should follow. This is the way a devotee ideally is. A person on the path of devotional service may inquire from the spiritual master all about the spiritual provision of God and the living entities, and so on. I think there's something down here that Prabhupada has a statement to give. One who's not well versed shouldn't try to be a spiritual master. It should be for the matter of material gain. It is illegal to become a spiritual master if one is unable to deliver the disciple. To use this word, illegal. If somebody's got to come and arrest you, it's probably true. Yeah?
One aspiration of all these questions. Because of his personal interest or because of others?
It's from what Prabhupada says, he's interested. Now, Krishna in his heart may be prompting him, he's interested, and Prabhupada says that we should be interested to know everything about the Lord and his energies as far as we hear from the authorities. A Prabhupada was asked, when it says the spiritual master knows everything, what does that mean? And he says, Prabhupada says, that means everything that he has learned from his spiritual master, that he knows. Prabhupada God says it's just like you want to. Yeah, this inquisitiveness is what's required. So we can. What are we at this time? We can take a break now for 5 minutes, you can look over those questions if you want to, and if you have any of the particular things on this list you want to discuss during the course of this thing. I have a few things I've pulled out, but you can look at these questions. Okay? About 5 minutes. Thank you.